So I thought for my invocation this morning, I would sing the traditional Agasura song, because if you know this song, you will never forget this story. If you know the song, please sing it along. My name is Agasura, I'm fat and I'm round. My lip is in the sky and my jaw is on the ground. My wide open mouth looks just like a cave. Soon it will be Krishna's grave. From my eyes fire glows, from my mouth hot wind blows. Soon I will be. Now I'm ready to swallow you. Do come in, dear boy of blue. I have not forgotten that song since 45 years, so you will remember this story. It's a great story. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Aho Mitrani Gadata. Aho Mitrani Gadata. Sattva Kutam Purastitam. Sattva Kutam Purastitam. Asmat Sangrasana Vyata. Vyala Tundayate Nava. Vyala Tundayate Nava. Please chant, gentlemen. Aho Mitrani Gadata. Sattva Kutam Purasitam. Asmat Sangrasana Vyata. Vyala Tundayate Nava. Aho Mitrani Gadata. Sattva Kutam Purasitam. Asma Sangrasana Vyata. Vyala Tundayate Nava. Omitrani Gadata. Sattva Kutam Parastitam. Asmat Sangrasana Vyata. Vyala Tundayate Nava. Aho Mitrani Gadata. Sattva Kutam Purastitam. Asmat Sangrasana Vyata. Vyala Tundayate Nava. Aho Mitrani Gadata. Sattva Kutam Purastitam. Asmat Sangrasana Vyata. Vyala Tundayate Nava. Aho Mitrani Gadata. Sattva Kutam Purasitam. Asmat Sangrasana Vyata. Vyala Tundayate Nava. Aho Mitrani Gadata. Sattva Kutam Purasitam. Asmat Sangrasana Vyata. Vyala Tundayate Nava. Aho mitrane gadata satvakutam purasitam asmat sangrasanavyata vyalatundayate nava Aho mitrane gadata satvakutam purasita asmat sangrasana vyata vyala tunda yate nava Ladies Aho mitrani gadata satvakutam parasitam asmat sangrasana vyata vyala tunda yate nava Aho mitrani gadatha satvakutam purasitam asmat sangrasana vyata vyala tundayate nava Aho mitrani friends gadatha just let us know Satvakutam, dead python. Purastitam, as it is just before us all. Asmat, all of us. Sangrasana, to devour us together. Vyatava, vyalatundayate. The python has spread its mouth. Nava, whether it is a fact or not. Translation. The boy said, Dear friends, is this creature dead, or is it actually a living python with its mouth spread wide just to swallow us all? Kindly clear up this doubt. Purport by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The friends began to discuss amongst themselves the reality of the wonderful creature laying before them. Was it dead, or was it actually a living python trying to swallow them up? I'm going to read till text 28 and end there. Text number 20. Therefore, they decided, Dear friends, this is certainly an animal sitting here to swallow us all. Its upper lip resembles a cloud reddened by the sunshine. And its lower lip resembles the reddish shadows of a cloud. Text 21. On the left and right, the two depressions resembling mountain caves are the corners of its mouth, and the high mountain peaks are its teeth. Text 22. In length and breadth, the animal's tongue resembles a broad traffic way, and the inside of its mouth is very, very dark, like a cave in a mountain. Text 23. The hot, fiery wind is the breath coming out of his mouth, which is giving off the bad smell of burning flesh, because of all the dead bodies he has eaten. Text 24. Then the boy said, Has this living creature come to swallow us? If he does so, he will immediately be killed like Bakasura without delay. Thus they looked at the beautiful face of Krishna, the enemy of Bakasura, and laughing loudly and clapping their hands, they entered the mouth of the python. Purport. After talking about the terrible animal this way and that way, they decided to enter the demon's mouth. They had full faith in Krishna because they had experienced how Krishna had saved them from the mouth of Bakasura. Now here was another Asura Agasura. Therefore, they wanted to enjoy the sport of entering the demon's mouth and being saved by Krishna, the enemy of Bakasura. Text 25. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who is situated as Antaryami, the Supersoul, in the core of everyone's heart, heard the boys talking amongst themselves about the artificial python. Unknown to them, it was actually Agasura, a demon who had appeared as a python. Krishna, knowing this, wanted to forbid his associates to enter the demon's mouth. Text 26. In the meantime, while Krishna was considering how to stop them, all the cowherd boys entered the mouth of the demon. The demon, however, did not swallow them, for he was thinking of his own relatives who had been killed by Krishna and was just waiting for Krishna to enter the mouth. Text 27. Krishna saw that all the cowherd boys who did not know anyone but him as their Lord had now gone out of his hand and were helpless, having entered like straws into the fire of the abdomen of Agasura, who was death personified. It was intolerable for Krishna to be separated from his friends, the cowherd boys. Therefore, as if seeing that this had been arranged by his internal potency, Krishna was momentarily struck with wonder and unsure what to do. Text 28. Now, what was to be done? How could both the killing of this demon and the saving of the devotees be performed simultaneously? Krishna, being unlimitedly potent, decided to wait for an intelligent means by which he could simultaneously save the boys and kill the demon. Then he entered the mouth of Agasura. Purport. Krishna is known as Ananta Virya Sarvagya because everything is known to him. Because he knows everything perfectly well, it was not difficult for him to find a means by which he could save the boys and at the same time kill the demon. Thus he also decided to enter the demon's mouth. So this is a bit of a puzzle. How does Krishna do both things at the same time? So I typically like to just give a little brief recap just to catch us up, particularly myself, who has not been here every day. The demon Agasura, he was the younger brother of Putana and Bakasura demons who had been previously killed by Krishna. And Kamsa sent him, but he also had some kind of agenda. And that agenda was that he wanted to avenge the deaths of his brother and sister. Now this is the general tendency of a person who is covered by their false ego. They tend to identify so deeply with their family members that if a family member is harmed or offended, they immediately desire to retaliate and avenge them. And this tendency to get revenge is what causes countries to go to war, because people think they belong to their country or their land of birth, and that it is worthy to lose their life to defend. It's also one of the reasons why there's street gang fighting or family feuds, where people are willing to die in order to get revenge for the death of someone who belongs to their tribe based on some shared bodily identification, such as a neighborhood or an ethnicity or social class and so on. So while Agasura was plotting how he would kill Krishna, Krishna and his cowherd boyfriends were playing in the forest just like ordinary boys. They were unaware of the impending danger being posed by this demon Agasura. And just like ordinary children without any cares, the cowherd boys chased one another, they played hide-and-seek, they shared their picnic lunches, and generally felt pretty joyful and carefree in the company of Krishna, who they had seen killed many other demons many other times, and so they had learned to become unafraid. Now, as the story unfolds, we see that in their joyful, carefree condition, the cowherd boys begin to wander away from Krishna, and not noticing that gradually they were being separated from him due to their exploration of the unusual and interesting environment that Agasura created with his disguised body that appeared just like a beautiful grassy mountain cave. The cowherd boys became so captivated by the beauty of that place that they put aside any reservation that their entering into it may lead them to their deaths. Sometimes we have had the experience that until a devotee is completely purified of all material desires, they can become enamored by materialistic pursuits that promise to provide them greater happiness than the joy they already have in Krishna's association. The material world is a very, very sophisticated Disneyland that offers a gazillion allurements. intended to enamor and captivate a person's mind from taking full shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. And sometimes Prabhupada would use the example of a group of gnats, you see this in India in nighttime, who in their irresistible attraction to the light, the ceiling light, they fly directly into the glow of the light of the lamp at night, only to be burned up, zapped, and killed in the end. In the morning, there's heaps of dead bodies of these bugs under every light bulb. And in their tiny insect minds, they may have a hunch that their moving towards the light will bring about their doom. I mean, after all, they must have seen others before them get zapped by the light. But their senses are so attracted to it, they put all reservations aside and risk their life in order to enjoy, even for that moment, the light, just for the flickering moment. So similarly, the cowherd boys were so captivated by the interesting illusion Agasura had created in the natural environment with this disguise that they pushed aside any reservations they may have had about their potential, its potential danger. They simply assumed that even were the situation to pose them any danger, Krishna would protect them, so they had no fear. Now, in the purport of text number 18, Prabhupada explains, some of the boys, upon seeing this wonderful phenomenon, thought that it was in fact a python, and they were fleeing from the spot. But others said, why are you fleeing? It is not possible that a python like this is staying here. This is a spot of beauty for sporting. That is what they imagine. And similarly, sometimes we have seen in our Krishna conscious community that when some devotees become allured by a new and interesting interpretation of the Krishna conscious philosophy, other devotees may express their concern for the hidden danger posed by this new and interesting philosophy. But the enamored devotees shoot it down, saying, there's no danger here, so don't worry. And in this way, often the true religious path can gradually become changed and lose its potency to free people from material life. Now Krishna, who was a short distance away, he could understand Agasura's intentions in disguising himself as a harmless playground to lure them into his mouth. He knew what would happen. He knew he could save them, and he would save them in the end. But he paused for a moment. Agasura, on the other hand, he was hoping that by seeing the cowherd boys going into the mouth, Krishna would, out of his attachment for the cowherd boys, he would be lured to follow them and come inside so he could kill him by swallowing him. It explains here in these verses that seeing the cowherd boys being lured into the demon's mouth, for a split second, Krishna became a little confused. He started to wonder how on earth was he going to save them and simultaneously kill the demon. So he paused and he took a few moments to reflect what he was going to do. Although Krishna wanted to warn them, don't go in there. If you go in there, it's going to bring your doom. He was too far away to communicate this to him directly. And even though Krishna in their hearts gave them some kind of intelligence, at least some of them had some intelligence to run away from the situation, because they sensed there was danger in the heart, Krishna was trying to tell them. There were other cowherd boys who were so strongly convinced that there was no danger that they convinced them to ignore their fears and venture into Agasura's mouth. So in this way, the cowherd boys simply marched off boldly into Agasura's mouth without caring at all for the consequences. Now, this jolly, carefree mood of the cowherd boys is characteristic of the devotee who has strong faith in Krishna, but who does not have the clarity of consciousness to understand the many subtle ways the material energy is alluring them. That takes a little bit of discrimination based on context, time, and circumstances. Such devotees, they are too naive to consider their possible consequences of their venturing away from Krishna in order to explore something that to them seems interesting and harmless. There's a saying, if it's too good to be true, It probably is. And we need to be aware that no matter how wonderful a situation may seem to be in the material world, there is always, 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 and I say this three times for emphasis, a downside hidden within it that we hadn't considered. And by the time we've realized the downside, we're already entangled in the trap. So the whole world is full of people who are trying to get happy by signing up for things that ultimately lead to their spiritual death and unhappiness. And even as devotees, we have to be on the lookout for the ways we are being fooled ourselves by the material energy, because what we think we are seeing as reality is generally not at all the case. Only a devotee who truly understands how the material energy works can get free from being bewildered by it. We cannot assume that just because we are devotees of Krishna that we no longer need to fear danger on the spiritual path. There was this notion in the early days of ISKCON that if I'm preaching, then I'm protected. And yes, that's in some ways true. But over and over we've seen historically that even a person who is fully engaged in preaching activities can become tricked by the material energy in a split second and become completely confused and forgetful of the goal of life. For example, and I have many examples, but this is just one example. There was a devotee in the early days who joined the movement in the a long time ago, and they had a lot of association with Srila Prabhupada. And she had been into drugs before she joined the movement, but Prabhupada gave her such a high taste, she was able to give it all up. But then all of a sudden, due to inappropriate association with a sannyasi, she and the sannyasi left the movement and started a brothel of all things. She began wearing leather clothes and engaged former brahmacharinis who used to distribute books in prostitution along with the sannyasi. And finally she ended up getting AIDS and found herself dying in a hospital. And as she was lying, dying in the hospital bed, she started to ask herself, she started to think, how did I get myself here? What am I doing here? So as she sat there, tracing it out, back and back and back, she finally came to her memory of Srila Prabhupada. And just by remembering Srila Prabhupada, she was able to find her way back to the movement and regain her spiritual life. So for a while, this devotee was so much under the influence of the material energy that she lost her spiritual life. She had become influenced by the toxic association of the Agasura demon. And there's so many stories of devotees whose intelligence became allured by the material energy and destroyed their spiritual life, even just temporarily. So none of us are ever really free from this danger that just by one small, unthoughtful choice, we can ruin our spiritual life, take a detour, and never come back. Prabhupada used to say that if you see a tiger on the path in front of you, just because you have faith that Krishna is in the heart of that tiger does not mean you should go and embrace it. Rather, you should turn around and go the other way. You shouldn't take such risks just because you think we are so highly exalted in spiritual life that we can embrace a tiger. We are not Lord Chaitanya. And Prabhupada used to criticize us Westerners by saying, the problem with you guys is that you do not fear the material world. And it's really true. In the Western world, we're really slow to get it, the hidden dangers of what the material world has to offer us. So sometimes in our innocence and naivety, like the cowherd boys, we venture out with perhaps more confidence in our level of Krishna consciousness than we truly have. There are many instances of this sort of behavior. For example, we may have met devotees who, after practicing Krishna consciousness for some time, get the notion that Srila Prabhupada's preaching strategies are old-fashioned or no longer relevant. I've heard this many places.
And Prabhupada used to argue, even in his day, when he was on the planet, people would criticize him or pose to him, you know, these are kind of outdated. Maybe we can modernize your teachings to fit the context. And Prabhupada used to argue that the problems of human life are still there, and they've been there since time immemorial. Birth, old age, disease, and death. And since thousands of years, there's only one solution. There is not any other solution. The only solution, it's always the same. Sarva dharma parijaja, mame kam sharana vraja. Give up all varieties of religion or all varieties of activities or philosophies or thought processes and just surrender to Krishna. There's no other solution. Mind may, like Agasura, you know, there may be something alluring and interesting, and, you know, performing tapasya or an austerity of practicing Krishna consciousness every day can sometimes feel dry, or it may feel repetitive, you know, and it means we have to go deeper to find the joy and the bliss that's actually there. Or sometimes a person may be allured into becoming materially qualified into some profession, like education, or health fitness, or yoga, or whatever, because they think it will lead them to financial stability or economic development. And they might even be thinking that they will use it as a preaching strategy, which in itself is not really a bad idea. But due to their lack of spiritual maturity, instead of influencing the materialistic institution or organization that they've become part of, they end up becoming influenced by it and losing their Krishna conscious intelligence in the process. Now, I've been part of many different organizations as part of my profession, and I can tell you one thing, that no matter where you go, no matter what organization you're in, they all have propaganda to try to make new members. So if you aren't very strong in trying to preach and influence them, they're definitely preaching to you, and they want your energy. They definitely want to take your energy. So Prabhupada used to call institutions for materialistic education slaughterhouses, because they completely destroy a person's spiritual life and lure them into striving for material comfort instead. I have personal experience of this type of allurement as a person who loves learning. I love collecting ideas, and ideas are a little bit like stuff. I mean, you can just go forever and ever and ever and gather thoughts. There's just so many interesting thoughts around, and you never come to the end of it. And there was a time in my life when I needed a way to support myself and my family. And so I had the desire to become conversant in theology and comparative religions, because I thought it would help me become a better preacher. So I thought going back to school, I could dovetail my material desire with my spiritual aspiration to preach. And so I spent a lot of time doing all of that. But over time, as I continued to study and receive diploma after diploma in this and that discipline, I finally came to the understanding that none of what I was learning would help me at the time of death, which could come at any moment, no matter how much knowledge I had. It was absolutely not going to help me cross that boundary. So like the cowherd boys, I had faith that Krishna would protect me, even while I was studying. It wasn't like I didn't see Krishna there. I had faith Krishna would protect me because he was always had. I could rely on him. I could experience Krishna revealing his presence in many ways while I attended college. Krishna was always revealing himself in all the subjects I was studying. Particularly as a religious study major, I could clearly see how other religions had come to many of the same conclusions as the Vedas. But in the beginning, I couldn't see that to continue gathering more and more information about interesting topics would not at all be helpful when it came to the time when I would have to leave my body. I also didn't realize there were so many subtle allurements in our minds and hearts that even though we might be practicing Krishna consciousness fully with our bodies, we can become completely bewildered and deviated from the path in our own minds by Krishna's external deluding energy. So all that's to say, we cannot become completely free from the material platform of consciousness until every speck of desire for material comfort is gone. I mean, we have to, every inch of our heart, every inch of our mind has to be completely free from any desire for anything for ourselves that might give us comfort. It's a very high level of consciousness. The desire for tasty food, even prasadam tasty food, sleeping on soft cushions or hirangikashi poos. The desire for respect, for fame, profit, being distinguished from others as special. The desire for love, friendship, and membership in an association, and so many other allurements. Like the cowherd boys whose downfall began when they wandered away from Krishna's association, proudly thinking that there was nothing to fear, thinking Krishna would rescue them, which was true in the long run, but which temporarily spoiled their spiritual lives. They died inside the belly of Agasura. If we become overconfident, thinking that we can sustain our spiritual lives without the constant association of Krishna in the form of his name, prasadam, the deity, and spiritual community, we're really setting ourselves up for spiritual disaster. Due to the toxic association of Agasura, the cowherd boys died within the belly of the snake. So similarly, this is often what happens when a spiritually immature devotee leaves the association of Krishna, thinking overconfidently that they can remain Krishna conscious on their own. They don't need the society. They don't need to regularly hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, in the nearly 17 years since I have either been studying theology or teaching theology, I have realized that the only way not to become confused by this kind of association is to be actively engaged in infusing whatever environment one is in with Krishna consciousness. I've also realized how important it is not to take their association by eating their food. That's a very key piece. If you can somehow or other cook your own prasadam, make your own prasadam, offer it to Krishna, and eat that in the midst of all the other stuff people are eating, you will have an amazing power to be able to not become influenced by that environment. If the devotee is not preaching to the material world will end up preaching to you. There's no in-between. So we actually have to preach in self-defense. It's part of our sadhana. Actually, we preach to save ourselves from being preached to by the material energy. There's no other way of getting free from this world of false ego. It's just not, if you're not busy, if the brain is idle, and it's not thinking about planning how we're going to spread Krishna consciousness, then it gets up to a lot of trouble. In the last verse that we read today, verse number 28, it says, "Now, what is to be done? How could both the killing of this demon and the saving of the devotees be performed simultaneously?" Krishna, being unlimitedly potent, he decided to wait for an intelligent means by which he could simultaneously save the boys and kill the demon. This was kind of a Zen koan. How do you do both? Because often, just like in the military, soldiers get killed by friendly fire. You know, you're trying to kill the enemy, but there's somebody there who's part of your team, and so you end up killing not only the enemy, but you kill a member of your team as well. And as we will see in the coming days as we unfold this story further, Krishna, he was able to accomplish the plan. He was able to kill the demon and save the cowherd boys who died due to Agasura's toxic association simply by entering into his mouth. That was his solution. That if I enter into the mouth of Agasura, I can simultaneously save the cowherd boys who had died due to bad association, and I could kill the demon. Now for me, the hidden message in this story for each of us is that by getting Krishna to enter our mouths in the form of the holy name and prasadam, and by getting Krishna into the mouths of materialistic people, Krishna will destroy the demons of envy, pride, greed, duplicitousness, false ownership, and bodily identification, and bring to life our true spiritual natures. So just by Krishna's entering our mouth, we can recover our constitutional position as eternal servants of Krishna. It's actually a really simple process. We just have to do it. Just by engaging our tongue in Krishna's service, will our sleeping spirit soul become awakened. And from one simple process, all the other spiritual processes unfold. In the Vedic literature, it describes how pretty much all of the sins we commit, most of the sins we commit, are committed by our tongue, what we say and what we eat. So the process of becoming sinless is to engage the tongue more and more in chanting Hare Krishna and tasting Krishna Prasadam. This is why Prabhupada said that every preaching activity needed to be accompanied by kirtan and prasadam. Somehow or other, if we can put Krishna into the mouth of the materialists, then the Agasura demon will be killed in all of our hearts and the world will gradually return to Vaikuntha. So I'm going to stop here and see if there are any comments or questions or suggestions or additions. Thank you very much. Yes. Satchitanoy, anything? Oh, you're waiting for some microphone. Okay.
Thank you, Mataji. That was a wonderful presentation. Oh. I'm going to read that at least 10 times if I can get that. It was very nourishing and a lot of information, a lot of topics to be discussed separately in different portions that you mentioned. But something also came to my mind about, you know, first of all, the power of Yoga Maya, the power of Mahamaya, how Yoga Maya is arranging everything so wonderfully there, and nothing is happening. Yoga Maya here in the material world is bewilderness. So now we have a mission here, and as preachers, because you mentioned at one time, someone might risk or take that danger path. It is like a danger path if you're not that strong and pure. So we have a mission, and we are not to be, let's say, like in Vrindavan or some other places, as many sadhus choose to be. And Prabhupada had a different vision. He came and risked and did so many things that it was not even likable to some of them. Yeah. So my question would be, in the name of sometimes of going out there, in the name of preaching, someone says, I'm going to do it this particular way because I can attract more people. And eventually, along the road, it will be all beneficial to living entities. If I remain in just in this, you know, structure, it might not be enough. That's what, you know, my assume to speak, and it may be slightly changed. Would that be a particular personal desire, or maybe mix with some kind of a, I don't know if I want to say this, but sense gratification sometime, that you want to sense?
Well, that's a very hard question because I'm not situated in your heart, so I don't really know what's going on inside of you. I mean, only you and Krishna would know that, and honesty and humility. This is why we have a spiritual teacher. We ask questions. We consult with the Vaishnavas. I think that's typical of all religious paths, is that you have the Vaishnava Sangha or the fellowship of other faith-filled people, and you consult. That's why we are together, is that you probably would be a little bit foolish to go against the consultation of the elders in the community. You know, if you had some fantastic idea that you thought was going to be better than Prabhupada's, it better be good, and you really better be able to convince those elders who have had lots and lots of experience with trial and error. And so I would be a little seeking guidance before I was going to do something like a shooting star. But like Prabhupada left the Gaudiya Math, and he did something really radical. He took a risk. He didn't know what he was getting with Western devotees. He came as an old man. And I can only understand he was in communication directly with Krishna, and so he had no doubt. I'm not sure I'm on that platform that I would be so bold to say, well, I would need to be of that level, which I'm not. And I don't know many people who are. And I think to assume that you are would be awfully arrogant. If you study Prabhupada's teachings and you study the teachings of his spiritual master, you start to see, oh, he was just following exactly what his spiritual master gave him. And I think you'd have to be able to justify that what you're teaching does not at all transgress the Siddhanta that's been handed down since Krishna. But I cannot tell you what's in your heart. My goodness. I think Savas could tell you that. I don't know.
I have more questions, but I...
Anybody else? Yes, Rabindranath.
Yeah, you mentioned how some of the cowherd boys entered Agasur and some didn't. I just want to know where that's stated.
It didn't say that. Prabhupada explains, I think it's in verse 18 of this. I didn't say they actually didn't enter. But in verse 18, which is right before number 19, Prabhupada comments, and it says in the translation that there were some cowherd boys who started to flee because they sensed the fear. And then there were other cowherd boys who said, no, no, there's nothing to fear, and convinced them to stay. And they all went along. And that happens in groupthink, you know. Somebody speaks louder or is more fancy with words, and they can convince us who might really have the right idea. Yeah, that's all I was saying.
Thank you.
Yeah. Maharaj.
First of all, I wanted to congratulate you on the fact that you harped on something which is so important, and that is beware.
I harped on something.
Well, that's a the double entendre there. So, but yeah, you harped upon something which is so important, and that is beware. Beware of this Maya. We walk around thinking that, well, so what, Maya? You know, I come to the temple, I chant Hare Krishna, what do I do? So you covered that so beautifully and so well, and you emphasized it again and again and again, which is the way I like it, because Prabhupada would say, repeat, 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 and he repeats throughout his books over and over and over so that you never forget it.
Yeah.
And it's so true.
Yeah.
So, but what I wanted to mention is probably just something on the other side, which Srila Prabhupada also gives, that... to avoid this Maya, Krishna gives the perfect solution, the perfect answer. You, of course, said, abandon all varieties of religions, surrender unto me, or always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, offer homage unto me, thus completely absorb me, surely you will come to me. I tell you this because you're my friend and my devotee. But there's another, which I feel is even stronger, and that is to avoid being captured, to avoid being allured. Krishna says, in all activities, just depend upon me. Mm. In other words, don't think you're big, don't think you're great, don't think you're wonderful, you're small, you're insignificant, you can't really do anything without my mercy. But you think you can. You think by your own endeavors you can make it, you can do it. But really, everything that you make and you do is being done by my grace, although you're completely stupid and you think it's by your own endeavor. So, as Krishna says, in all activities, just depend upon me. Work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. However, if you do not take this shelter, what will happen is you will be lost. So he gives the perfect answer.
Yeah.
What does dependency mean? It means instead of thinking that you're big, you're great, you're wonderful, you're capable, you're a provider, you're a this and that. No, I'm a nothing. But with Krishna, I can become a something. Mm-hmm. And when people call me, hey, that's wonderful. You did this great. You did that. So you say, thank you very much. But in your heart of hearts, you say, Krishna, thank you. All the credit goes to you. And therefore, you don't get flooded with this false pride, which comes from thinking that you did something great.
Right. You're just the peon delivering the message. Anything else? Yeah, Champriya. Thank you, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna, thank you, Masiji. That was a wonderful class. I'd just like to reveal something to the devotees that for me, coming from a different place to live in Los Angeles, I've always been unable to feel fully confident here in that. You know, for instance, there's not a water supply available. Our food in this place comes from very far away, and we are totally dependent on Krishna's mercy in more than maybe many places in the world where the devotees are more set up and they have a better, you know, like a something to fall back on. Here we're completely dependent on Krishna because nothing here is natural and nothing is provided by the actual earth that we're living on. And for me, the Agasura pastime always brought that to light more, how I saw everybody just kind of going along very happily and just like Krishna will protect us and we're all fine and we're Hare Krishna. And I was always like struck with kind of awe, like, my God, you know, we don't have the basics that we need as soon as this society, which is kind of tottering on the edge of any kind of catastrophe, whether it's earthquake or war, or so many things can happen the way things are set up, that we actually have no backup plan whatsoever. And I always felt like I was one of those cowherd boys who was fleeing and going like, no, and everyone was just, especially my husband was trying to convince me, no, preaching, we must do this and we must stay like that. And so I stayed, but I always felt like that, and I just wanted to share that with everyone because it's a different perspective that maybe other people never thought of.
Okay, thank you for that. You didn't have a question with that,
Richard. I didn't, it was just a comment, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I guess if you're in the front line, you're thinking, I'm going to die fighting on the battlefield. I mean, I think that's in the city temples, that's what we're doing. So it's kind of a sacrifice, you know. It would be lovely to luxuriate in a natural place with natural bubbling springs and this and that. And there are temples that have that. But in Los Angeles, there's such an enormous opportunity to preach to people that if you're here, it's kind of the obvious thing we should be doing, you know, in the hopes that when the time comes, maybe somebody will donate it. You know, maybe Krishna will give us something. Did you want to say something about that? Or not? You don't have to. Yeah.
Where we ended up.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody wants to be in an unnatural position, but our natural position is to serve Krishna.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean, even if you go to hell, Prabhupada said that, even if the pure devotee of the Lord goes to hell, he's thinking about, you know, serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So yeah. We're probably in hell. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, we're you know, smelling a lot of smog, and the air is not good to breathe. And yes, the food is in such a condition, but at least it gives us the energy to go out and still try to somehow or other glorify Srila Prabhupada and what he stood for.
Yeah.
And we're here. In Vaikuntha, Prabhupada said, wherever the Supreme Lord is being worshipped, here is Sri Rukmini Rakadish. This is the spiritual world. It's all a matter of consciousness. So, you know, if the devotee is in hell, it's a matter of consciousness. You know, if they have Krishna consciousness, they'll accept any hardship. Even Prahlad Maharaj, he prayed to Lord Nrisimhadev. He wanted to give him all kind of benedictions. He said, no, just let me stay here in the city. I don't want to go out into the mountains, the Himalayas, and perform all these, you know, artificial meditations. But let me just stay in the city so that I can help these most fallen, wretched, forgotten individuals who are trying to get involved in sense gratification to the point where they just kill themselves for it.
Right.
And someone has to be in the city.
Right. And we're kind of, if you look at the histories, and I've done plenty of it, look at the histories of other movements and religions, they start out with not much facility. The Christian church started out as like us, you know, sort of hippies wandering around and stuff. And we may not see it. There may come a time. We may not see all these beautiful park-like retreat centers that we all dream about. It may be that we're making a way, planting seeds that after we die and many generations to come will turn into that. But we don't have the luxury right now to just leave the preaching field to do that. I know Prabhupada, when he was here, devotees would say, you know, Prabhupada, you know, the cows are really treated badly and we're getting our milk and we're drinking that milk. And Prabhupada would say, well, you know, hopefully others will come and join us and then they will be able to supply. But we have to keep preaching so that eventually somebody who has the money and the time and the talents will
will be able to do that, and we may not enjoy that. We may be creating something that we won't enjoy in the end in this lifetime.
I think we should also know that Prabhupada was a Calcutta boy.
Calcutta man.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, said, I'll take a Calcutta man any day.
Yeah, we're fighting.
So
yeah.
There's something to be said about being a Calcutta boy in a very a hellish condition. The anus, it was considered to be the anus of the world, Calcutta.
That's an image,
and this is where Srila Prabhupada came and started his preaching movement. And I think that we need to all be properly situated. You know, I think that if one is feeling very disturbed being in a city of this caliber, then they should go somewhere where they can actually feel less disturbed in order to execute their service. And I think that's very important. I mean, I stay in Los Angeles. If you ask me why do I love L.A. Do I love the smog? No. Do I love anything about... I don't even know anything about L.A.
Yeah.
If you ask me where to go, I don't know where to go. Sometimes I'm embarrassed when somebody comes here and says, can you take me to a different place? I don't even know where to take them.
Right.
Because I only know this block. I do know this block. This is where I stay. This is what I love.
Right.
And I love L.A., but not what L.A. represents. I love L.A. because it has a lot of facilities for preaching Krishna consciousness.
That's right.
So we need to be properly situated. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And if we don't, then we'll be disturbed. So we should consider what we can do to spread Krishna consciousness in our own situation where we feel most comfortable.
Right.
That's important.
Use our gifts. Thank you for that.
Take my shot.
Okay, one last thing. We need to probably stop. I think people are... I don't know. Do you want to say something?
The Varnasham Dharma system is a reality. As devotees, we're interested in the mode of goodness. Prabhupada wanted Varnasham Dharma. We can have both. We can have both city temples and farms.
Right, right.
We tried that earlier on in our society. I used to live in Gita Nagari.
Mm.
So we tried that. I think we can get back to that. There was an early attempt at farming. And that's a very natural thing to have... our children there, our schools there, the cows there. I think we could have interacted more. There's things we could have done. Maybe we could have had ghee coming from the farms. We could have bought the ghee.
Mm-hmm.
We could have bought the vegetables. We could have had more interaction between the farms and the city temples because both are essential.
They are.
They're both essential. So,
they are.
And then we could have gone to the farms. If you're living in the city and you're doing your preaching here, you can go to the farm for a little R&R on the weekends. And get that mode of goodness going, you know, and then come back. So that can go on.
Yeah. Oh, well, maybe it's coming. Maybe it will come.
Definitely. Yeah.
I think we need to stop. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.